Getting into showers tomorrow and 52. It's currently 54. I'm Dale Cranford, News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The following program is paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Each weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, Talking Health, presented by CHI Mercy Health. Now, here's Talking Health with Lisa Platt on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon to you, Kyle Bailey. In for Lisa Platt, who is plenty busy with things going on at the Mercy Foundation and with Mercy Medical Center. So I'm going to be handling this program for the time being. And today, once again, much like we did last week in some ways, we're going to get an overall in-depth look at the county response to COVID-19, what's going on with the Douglas Public Health Network, and talk to some of the folks involved. And, of course, at the forefront of that is the county public health officer, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer. We're also going to be joined by Brian Mahoney from DPHN this afternoon as well. And in fact, just to make everything even a bit more socially distant, they're joining us from DPHN this afternoon. Dr. Bob and Brian, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So, Dr. Bob, let's start with you. First of all, give us an overall update on the numbers, where we stand locally, statewide, and beyond as of today.
Well, unfortunately, this pandemic is progressing kind of as we thought. We've had very rapid spread of the disease in the world. As I look right now, 782,000 cases, which is more than double the cases this time last week. So it really is growing and growing quickly, and the number of deaths is also growing quickly. So now we've got about 37,000 deaths out there. So this has been really quite a terrible thing. Places such as Italy and Spain and France are really struggling now with lots of deaths. So it really is a grim situation in many of those countries. Korea and China have seemed to figure it out, and they've had relatively few new cases. So, for example, I see yesterday or today, China's had only 31 new cases, and Korea's had very few. So we can get our hands on this, but we're still a way off. In the U.S., we've seen a very rapid increase in cases. And most of these have come in areas where there are big outbreaks. New York especially has had a really enormous outbreak, but we're now also seeing a big outbreak in New Orleans and Detroit. And the good news is that in California and Washington, which instituted aggressive social distancing a few weeks ago, we started to see a decline in the number of cases there, and we're hoping that Oregon is going to follow that good pattern. Locally, we have now 8 cases. 3 new cases today, 1 new case yesterday. And so this is coming in Douglas County. You know, we were hoping it would somehow pass over us, but always knew that it would probably come. So it's here now, 3 new cases today, 1 person in the hospital. So it's evolving just as we predicted.
And talk about the local aspect of this. This is obviously new ground for a lot of people, and how information is released and how things are done. I'll ask you one of the questions that I've gotten a number of times in the past week for the local cases. How come more information isn't put out about these folks? Obviously not names, but in terms of other things about them or parts of the county they live in, things like that.
Sure. So, you know, we live in a relatively small county. So if you said, 52-year-old in Tiller, there's probably only one of those, and people might be able to deduce who it is. And we're really trying to prevent the privacy. But what I can tell you is now that we've got a handful of cases, they come from every part of the county. There's no part of the county where they're not patients. Most of the patients who get diagnosed are older, because older people have the worst symptoms and they're more likely to get tested, although we think it's probably in all age groups. When we check these people's itineraries, they look like everybody else's. And the week before they got sick, they went to the grocery store, they went to other places. Where, any place where they've had close contact, we let people know. And so if you've gotten contacted, you've had close contact. If you've not gotten contacted, you've not had close contact.
So the close contact would then be family, extended family, maybe coworkers, people like that?
Yes. So it would be anybody that you'd spend more than a moment with over the last week or so. So, you know, typically that would be a coworker, certainly would be a family worker. It could be somebody, for example, you had an extended meal with. So those would be the people we would be contacting.
Now, let's talk about the testing. You've done a number of drive-up clinics in the past couple of weeks. Is other testing going on beyond those?
Yes. So we're doing the drive-through testing. These are outpatients who are well enough to drive through. But in addition, we're doing testing of patients who are hospitalized with pneumonia, and there's some patients in the ED who are really quite sick, and then they test them in the ED. And then doctors in the community can do testing, and so some doctors in the community are doing a bit of testing.
And talk about the actual test process. We've covered this a bit before, but more and more people are asking about this test, a bit of an unusual one, it seems like.
Well, the test is different in some ways. One is that, the best sample is from the deep nasopharynx, which means a long, skinny Q-tip goes in 5 inches in your nose, tickles your nasopharynx. We twist it to try and scrape off as much of the virus as we can, and we do it. So that's a test that most people haven't had done. And the second is it's called a PCR test, or a polymerase chain reaction test. And those are tests that you can't easily do in a local lab. So they typically get sent away to a more specialized laboratory.
Now, Douglas County has been at the forefront with the drive-through testing. Is more of those clinics in the offing?
Yes, we have another clinic scheduled for Tuesday. Although, interestingly, we, like many places, are running out of supplies. And the supplies are these special Q-tips that you need to use. We have enough for this week's clinic, but we're not sure we have much after that.
Interesting. And obviously the supply chain is probably being worked on pretty aggressively at all angles.
Well, the supply chain is very important. It turns out, for bizarrely enough, that the place where these swabs are made is Bergamo, Italy. And Bergamo, Italy is in the epicenter of the Italian outbreak. So we don't import very much else from Italy, but we do import these swabs from Italy, and they're right in the middle of it.
So is there the potential for some other company to take this on? Although, obviously, there's a lot of logistical aspects to that.
Yeah, well, we're certainly hoping for it. You would hope that the lack of Q-tips wouldn't be the limiting factor, but bizarrely enough, it appears to be.
So for the tests in the county, remind people as well, one of the things about the tests is the equipment that professionals like yourself need to be wearing, and explain again why these are most effective to test a large number of people in a short amount of time versus one test here, one test there.
So we want to be sure that the people doing the testing are protected. If you do a nasopharyngeal swab correctly, people will cough, and because you have to be sticking this in their nose, you are by definition within a foot of them at a time they're letting out an explosive cough. So we want to be sure that the people who are doing this testing are well protected. And to do that, we use these things called PAPRs, which are these personal respirators, and they basically blow air past the person and have excellent filtration so as to give high levels of protection to the people who are doing the testing. And so that's how we do it. We want to be sure they're protected. Now, you can do this in a clinic or in the emergency room, but then again, the provider needs to get fully gowned and gloved and use a high-efficiency face mask. And those high-efficiency face masks are in short supply. And if somebody coughs on your face mask, you have to get rid of it and get a new one. And we're really short on those, too. So when we do it at this specialized clinic, they have these disposable face shields. And so if people cough on you, they cough on you, but it doesn't ruin the face shield.
You've talked about these clinics a number of times, begun 3 years ago as a flu vaccine clinic, but with the idea that someday a purpose like this would come along and they would be best utilized in this environment. Have other counties begun to do similar types, sort of the same format you're doing in their county in Oregon?
Yes, they are.
And do we know how many other places that's taking place in the state?
Yeah, I get calls all the time from people who are looking to set these up. I don't know exactly how many they've collected. There are some bigger areas that have collected more than we have just because they're bigger areas. But we were certainly one of the first. And for our population, we've actually done quite a bit of testing.
Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us, also Brian Mahoney with us from Douglas Public Health Network. Brian, I want to bring you in at this point. First of all, kind of explain what your role on a typical, normal day, aside from all of this, is at DPHN.
Sure. This is Brian Mahoney, and I am the Public Health Modernization Program Coordinator, and that is a statewide effort and also regional to improve the way public health does things. So normally, I would be working with Coos and Curry and other partners here in Douglas County. We get a lot of multi-sector partners together and work on public health issues, not strictly from a public health perspective, but public health has a lot of social determinants of health. So we work with people in housing or economics or education, a lot of different areas that also public health impacts, and they impact public health. So that's what I usually do. Our three main goals are to improve disease reporting, improve immunization rates of two-year-olds, and to work on the social determinants of health and health equity.
Now, Brian, how long have you been at DPHN?
I've been with DPHN for just over 2 years.
And what was your background that led you to ultimately be here?
Well, I graduated from Portland State with a health education degree and went into the Peace Corps. So I started Peace Corps in 1983 in water and sanitation and went back from that. That was in Kenya, and went back to the United States and started working with the state of Oregon Public Health and Environmental Health. And then CDC was hiring, and I went with them into STD HIV prevention, and that was right at the beginning of the HIV epidemic. So I was on the ground floor of that. I did that for several years, and then CDC sent me to the World Health Organization to work in the Geneva office on polio eradication. And so that was a big step, knocked polio down by hundreds of thousands of cases a year. And then came back and began to work in public health informatics at CDC, and then that led into the bioterrorism preparedness program, because at 9/11 and the anthrax cases, we were working on the communications with the entire country at that time. That led to about $1 billion going out the door, just similar to what we're doing now. But there wasn't an infrastructure at the state level to spend all that money on bioterrorism, public health outbreaks, and other public health threats and emergencies as we're seeing now. So I came back to Oregon and began working in the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Office there for another 10 or 11 years. Also went to Clatsop County and was public health director there for several years. And then just recently moved back to Roseburg, where I actually grew up here in Douglas County and went to the high school and graduated. Douglas Public Health Network had a spot open, and I was fortunate enough to be here at the right time, and just seems to be everything's working together.
Now, did you end up, did you graduate from Roseburg High then?
I did.
And what year was that?
1975.
So you've really, this is a very unique story in itself, I'm sure, to have gone literally around the world in all this and then find yourself back here.
Yeah, it's a culmination of a career I guess I prepared for the whole life, and here it is. It's disease control, it's public health emergency preparedness and response, and it's finding cases and controlling the disease.
All right, we're going to take a break on talking health, and when we come back, more with Dr. Bob Dannenhofer and with Brian Mahoney from Douglas Public Health Network. It's 4:20 on Talking Health from News Radio 1240 KQEN. We'll be right back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hi there, 423 Kyle Bailey in for Lisa Platt on Talking Health. Lisa busy with Mercy Foundation and Mercy Medical. A busy time for everybody in the health area, whether it's public health or working in hospital settings, etc. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us this afternoon, and Brian Mahoney from the Douglas Public Health Network. Dr. Bob, let's go back to you. I want to talk about this social distancing aspect. What's your observation in the past few days? How is Douglas County doing at social distancing?
So I've needed to go out over the last few days for some sort of critical duties. Otherwise, I should be at home. But when I've been out, I've been checking. People, for the most part, are doing an excellent job. I have had a few people who want to get a little too close, and I sort of push them back. But for the most part, I think people are doing an excellent job. Again, with social distancing, you don't have to be perfect. You just need to decrease the number of social contacts. So I've been very cautious over the last 3 days how many social contacts I've had. That is people within 6 feet. And I think the number is typically two, my wife and my daughter. But other than that, people have been very good about staying distant. So kudos to everybody in Douglas County.
And I know it's been a very interesting switch, and it's something that has happened so quickly. Stores developing their own methods, whether it's stars on the floor or red lines or whatever. Also, a number of retailers, especially in the larger sector, putting in plexiglass guards to kind of put more space between customers and store clerks. In some cases, stores having people with reusable bags now bagging whatever it is they're purchasing themselves. A lot of changes real quick. A lot of people have been adapting. And of course, yesterday, Dr. Bob, the announcement from President Trump that on the federal level, this is extending through the end of April.
Yes, so I applaud everybody's ingenuity. I noticed many of the changes that you had noticed. And you know what? Life still goes on, so people can still talk to the clerk through the plexiglass shield. And if that gives some extra protection to them, good for that. In terms of extending the social distancing for another month, I think that's an excellent idea.
And I know you've talked before about staying out of the political part of things and staying on the health side. But obviously, for a federal government to make that, to put that out there, knowing everything that that means on a lot of different arenas, I know it was a move that wasn't taken lightly.
Certainly not taken lightly, because this social distancing is really making a big deal for many businesses who are now closed or much less than they were before. So it really is a big economic deal. And this is a sacrifice that I think Americans are making to help protect those among us who might die through this. And that would mostly be our parents and our older relatives.
So for the process of what Douglas Public Health Network is doing right now, Brian Mahoney, I want you to explain, first of all, I think a lot of people are getting a medical education here in the past few weeks, whether they really wanted one or not. One of the questions I got in our building today is, just what on earth is an epidemiologist?
Well, there are a couple of types of epidemiologists. They all have usually a master's in public health degree and generally can specialize or not in biostatistics. But there are two types of epidemiologists. One of them usually handles the data and makes sense out of the data and presents it and let other people know about it. And then there's another type of epidemiologist who works in the field. They do the investigations. Sometimes it's the same person doing both, depends on the organization. But the field work is interviewing cases or contacts. They work with the medical information that they have. They look for where, when, who, and what was involved in the infection. They deal with the data and they deal with the follow-up. The important things that we're trying to look at right now are things like exposure. That is when somebody was exposed to the organism. We look at the incubation period, which is the period of time between when somebody was exposed and when they start to have symptoms. We look at the infectious period, which is when the person who's been exposed and probably has developed symptoms, although it can be spread sometimes without symptoms. But we look at that infectious period, And we try and figure out then how long that lasted. And then we try and work within that time period. That's the critical period. So we can find people, inform them whether they've been exposed or and then what else they need to do. Now, we don't have medications to either prevent this or to treat the symptoms more than just, you know, just basic care for the person when they're ill. But we want everybody who's either been exposed to stay home 14 days after their last exposure to a person who was known to be infected. And we want the person who is a case, that is the person who is sick, to stay isolated until the symptoms are over plus 3 days. And everybody, whether they're sick or not, whether they know they've been exposed or not, or whether they've been ill, keep social, physical and social distance. And that's that everybody can be an epidemiologist in that way and help prevent and control the cases.
So obviously this is very precise, very detailed, very important, and not only in helping with the current situation, but I would presume, and tell me if I'm wrong, I would presume that you would also be helping to gather data, which at some point will be submitted to state and federal levels, so that this can be evaluated up the road as well.
Well, yes, and in fact, we have some data that we're presenting every day. You are probably very well aware that we have certain numbers of cases, certain number of tests that have been performed, and certain number of tests that have come back negative. There are a lot of other things that we'll probably be looking at. This being an emergency, we're also looking at what is our infrastructure? How prepared are we? How prepared should we have been? And we'll be going back over that. I think a lot of sociologists, politicians, public health people, economists are all going to be looking at this over the next decade to see what we could have been or what we should be doing or should have been doing.
Now, every day, Douglas Public Health Network putting out a local county update, Oregon Health Authority around the same time of day putting theirs out as well. And when those come back, when the information comes back, the testing results goes to the provider, the physician of the person being tested. But so does it come to public health simultaneously? How does that work?
So pretty much simultaneously they come together. So there were two cases over the weekend that I worked up, and in both of those, when I got the data and called the patient, they said, "I just heard from my doctor." So it must happen fairly simultaneously.
And then when you take that, obviously you're watching around the county, and because we're a large county, Dr. Bibb, you mentioned that this is now spread around the county, but I'm sure you're also monitoring for things like if it happened to be mainly in one part of the county. I mean, you're probably looking for all kinds of different things in the data that could alter the response or maybe some of the information you put out to the media and to the public.
Absolutely. So, for example, you heard yesterday in Eugene that they said that they saw an outbreak related to a church. And so they said that we unfortunately have not seen that. When we look at the typical time, we think that people got infected, which is typically right around 5 days, but can be as little as 2 to 14 days. And then put those together, we've not been able to find a place where more than one person has been during that infectious period. So, you know, if you're able to find that, that would be useful information for people. But it's not particularly useful when people have been around doing the regular kind of things that they do.
Now, I read something today and am steering in the right direction here because I'm looking at all kinds of information throughout the day. But something that I read talked about there's a percentage of people who may test negative for it, but then later, if symptoms, I presume, come back or stay linger too long, are tested again and then are tested a second time. Sometimes a percentage of those folks come back positive later. Can you explain that?
Yes. So, you know, this virus grows well in the lungs. It doesn't grow particularly well in the back of the throat. So unlike strep throat, which grows very well in your throat, or flu, which grows very well in your anterior nose, this one does not grow particularly well in those areas. And so you don't have a lot of virus in those areas. So the Chinese recognized that there were some people who were at high risk for this, had symptoms of this, and they would test them every day. And they found that on the first few days, it was hard to find the virus. It got a little easier on the third through the 12th day. And then after the 12th day, the virus again went down. And that's why we're recommending in our screening to find people who are sick three, but no more than 12 days to get the highest rate of recovery. This is not a particularly sensitive test, meaning that there are likely people who have it who test negative once or twice because of the low sensitivity of this test.
And let's cover this again, because I think it's an important point for people, is the impact, or I guess your reaction to the virus worsening, being more serious, the older you get. And the data there is pretty pronounced, it seems like.
It is very pronounced. Unlike most diseases, which kind of affect all ages, this is a disease which very predominantly affects the old and the sick. So if we talk about death rates per 1,000, 2 per 1,000 in the 20s, which is still a lot, right? There's no other disease out there that killed 2 in 1,000 in the 20s. I mean, measles is a bad disease, but only kills 1 in 1,000 at any age. So this is a bad disease. But then when you get up to 80 and above, and we have lots of people 80 and above, it kills 150 in 1,000. That is a really serious disease. That's a nasty disease for old people.
So for people in the middle ages, 40s, 50s, what are some of the stats there?
So let's go by thousands. So in the per 1,000, or we can – so per 1,000 people, we have 110,000 people in Douglas County, so multiply by 110 to see what happens. So for kids less than 10, the rate is very small. We think there are only a couple of deaths ever reported in the whole world. As you start to get to 10 to 40 or so, the death rate is about 2 in 1,000. As you get to be in your 50s, it's a few in 1,000. In your 60s, as I am, it's 5 in 1,000. It's 50 in 1,000. And then as you get to 80, it's 150 in 1,000. 150 in 1,000 is a lot.
So, yeah, big difference there given the change. So for people that may test positive in those younger age groups, though we are seeing, because this is, you know, nothing applies across the board perfectly, but you are less likely to have a serious reaction if you are in a younger age group.
Absolutely. Now, we think your risk of infection is the same, but we think that young people tend to have either mild illness or asymptomatic. There are still some that get hospitalized. So one of the things we've noted in the U.S. is that when we look at the initial data of hospitalizations, there are far more younger people than you would expect, suggesting that we've done a pretty good job of isolating our seniors.
All right, going to take a break on Talking Health. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, County Public Health Officer, and Brian Mahoney, the Public Health Modernization Program Coordinator for the Douglas Public Health Network. The interview is a podcast. You'll be able to catch it soon at 541radio.com right after the conclusion of today's program. A three-minute break now, then we'll be right back. In for Lisa Platt, I'm Kyle Bailey with Talking Health on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
In for Lisa Platt, I'm Kyle Bailey and Talking Health 439. The afternoon report coming at 5 with Douglas County's news team. Via phone from the DPHN headquarters for Douglas Public Health, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, County Public Health Officer, and Brian Mahoney, the Public Health Modernization Program Coordinator, with us this afternoon. Dr. Bob, real quick, for people who may have joined midway, remind folks what the county stats are for Douglas County as of today in terms of the number of positive cases of COVID-19.
Well, we had one new case yesterday and three new cases today, so we're up to 8 cases in the county. And again, now that we have enough cases, I think we can tell you that these cases are very evenly distributed throughout the county. In fact, they're so evenly distributed that there's no two in the same area. They really come all around the county. So as I've been telling people, is you should use universal respiratory precautions. If anybody's coughing, they should be home. People should cover their cough and people should wash their hands, assuming that anybody you came into contact with was positive. We've not been able to find any single site where everybody got infected. It appears that they got this somewhere in the community.
Now, we are seeing, as I looked around at the state data earlier, it seems like places like Multnomah and Marion and Washington County are particularly harder hit. Obviously, those are all more populous counties. Is that the main reason for that, or are there other factors you're aware of as well?
Well, it appears at this point that most of the outbreaks in the country are occurring in more urban places, probably because in more urban places, you tend to have more contact with people. You ride the bus, you ride the subway, you work in a big place or go to a big store. And so we think people have more contact and it's more likely to spread there. But we do know that more rural areas will likely get hit in the second wave. So we're telling people we got a little bit of a respite here. This is time to absolutely improve our social distancing.
Are there any counties in the state that are so far with zero cases left?
As of last night, and I haven't checked this morning, as of last night, I don't think there were any cases in Curry County. But again, that would go along with the sense that this is more in urban counties and less in rural counties.
Now, I noticed over the weekend, I think it was on Saturday, it's all starting to run together, as it probably is for both of you, as to what day it actually is at any given moment. For instance, Jackson County got 10 new cases in one day. Does that mean something is going on, or is that just because a lot of people were tested at the same time and their results were all coming back at the same time?
So we don't know. Jackson County is doing an investigation into those areas to see if there's a common link. There may be a common link. For example, we don't know if maybe six of those people could have been from the same area or whatever. So they'll look for that link. And I know they've been doing more testing. So it's probably a combination of both. So I've heard over the last week, the reason we're finding so many more cases because we're doing testing. I think they've got it totally backwards. I think the reason we weren't finding more cases before is we were doing such terrible testing. And now that is we do slightly better testing, we're seeing an increased number of cases. But I don't think there's anybody in public health that thinks that there's only eight cases in Douglas County. I would say there's only eight cases we know about. There's probably dozens or scores or maybe even hundreds of cases that we have not been able to diagnose.
Brian Mahoney, in your work with DPHN, the Epi Strike Team, I understand there was some training last week. Talk more about the team and about the training.
Okay, sure. So the Epi Strike Team is an emergency management phrase. So a strike team is a group of people that all do the same thing. And we have a lot of partners in the community that we've been working with, Aviva and others. And we know that there are a lot of people out there with skills and they're not actually at work. So we put out a request for some skilled people, mostly they're nurses or some other professionals in the health field who want to participate. So what the Epi Strike Team is going to do is help us with our case interviewing and finding contacts to those cases. And we have set up some training last week, which was just how do you do an interview, basically. And a lot of these folks talk to people all the time and know how to take medical type questions. So we think that their skill sets are there. So we set up the Epi Strike Team. We have about eight volunteers that are coming aboard. We've also requested help from what is known as SERVOR, or the State Emergency Response Volunteers for Oregon, which is a public health database where licensed healthcare providers have volunteered and have been screened, and they have also been tapped. They initially helped us with the hotline. We have a hotline number at DPHN where people have been calling. I think we have well over 800 calls in the past 3 weeks, people wanting to know a lot of general things or more specific things. And so volunteers from the community have been doing that as well, and also volunteers from the SERVOR. So the Epi Strike Team will receive sort of advanced training tomorrow. We know that we are right on the brink of even more cases. Douglas Public Health Network has a small group of public health workers here, but there are at least four of us here who are epidemiologists and have had quite a bit of experience. So we know we have the backbone organization is well prepared. And when we get these volunteers in to perform additional case finding and interviewing, that should help us a lot. And we will we will share the load with them.
And so obviously it's crucial when you have a staff that's normally designed for normal needs outside of times like these to be able to have these folks come on board and help you out.
Exactly. And that's why public health emergency preparedness planning for surge capacity is so important. And over the last couple of decades, public health around the country has been doing such planning.
And is this the first time we've needed to do something quite like this in Douglas County?
First time we know of in a long time. Douglas County was around back in 1918. I'm sure they did something, but they haven't kept very good records.
And Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. Brian mentioned the hotline as well. You've been doing periodic Facebook Live events. Do you know when the next one of those will be?
It'll be in about an hour. So at 6 o'clock tonight, people can look on Facebook Live. That's a good time for people to ask their questions. And so I have very little script to start with this. Basically, people put questions in the comment section, and we answer as many as we can get. And so the questions you asked are similar to the kind of questions we get during our Facebook Live.
And are you hearing and I know you're handed the questions, if I recall correctly, but do you feel like you're getting a pretty good cross-section of the community in terms of age groups and where people are chiming in from?
Well, they're chiming in, we think, from all over Roseburg. There are some people who are really armchair epidemiologists, and we welcome that, and they've got a lot of good questions. I think there are other people who probably watch other news sites and have questions from there. So I think the questions are great. Now, I don't know the answers to all of the questions. So people say, well, like, does hydroxychloroquine work for this? And I'll tell people what I know, which is we don't know. And so there's a lot of times I'm saying, well, we don't really know yet, or we're going to look for that. But you know, we answer as honestly as we can, which in this case, in many cases, we don't know the answer.
Interesting. And again, it's going to be tonight on the Douglas Public Health Network Facebook page, 6 o'clock. How long do you run?
Until we run out of questions, typically an hour.
All right, going to take a break, our final break on Talking Health. One more segment when we come back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Thanks for being here. And for Lisa Platt, I'm Kyle Bailey. Lisa Platt, busy with Mercy Foundation and Mercy Medical during this critical time. And we're using this space on Mondays to talk with our County Public Health Officer, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, and other folks from Douglas Public Health Network, and perhaps others over time that are involved in dealing with the local response to COVID-19. Brian Mahoney with us this afternoon as well. He's the Public Health Modernization Program Coordinator for DPHN. I want to say real quick before we jump back into our discussion to kind of cross-reference our interview from earlier today on Inside Douglas County when I talked to Dr. Cora Hart from South River Medical Center regarding sort of the mental health aspects of this. If you didn't get a chance to hear that, it's a podcast up at 541radio.com, but it would be worth checking out. And Dr. Bob, I'm sure while your specialty is not in mental health, obviously this is this has been and will be for quite a while a very taxing situation on folks mentally.
Yes, I think this is going to be very hard on people's mental health. I think certainly for patients who have PTSD or have watched a loved one be sick, it's going to be really, really hard to watch. In addition, we know for workers, they really worry about bringing this disease home to family and friends. So this has been really hard on some health workers, especially where PPE is short. So we think there's going to be a good amount of mental health stuff. I've already had a couple of friends who've lost parents. So I think this is going to be a big deal.
So let's talk a little bit more about, as you go through and investigate these cases and the contacts people have, and either one of you can jump in on this. You talk about, coworkers, friends, extended family, things like that. But for instance, if somebody realizes that they test positive, you're talking to their coworkers. But what about for the coworkers when they come home, their family? When you talk about quarantining, things like that, what's the protocol there if you're a family member of someone who's got a coworker who's been tested positive, for example?
We'll start at the beginning. So when we have somebody who is infected, we look at their family. Clearly, we think that their family has likely been exposed. Interestingly, they don't all get it, but we think they've been exposed, and we would subject them to a 14-day quarantine. We would then look at coworkers and people who had close contact with a coworker. That coworker should be on a 14-day quarantine, and that person's contact should be on careful self-monitoring.
Okay, so that... Go ahead.
So careful self-monitoring means that they could go to work. They would prefer for them to stay at home. We prefer that everybody would stay at home, but that's the second ring. So the first ring would be the inner dot is the person who has it. The first ring is the coworker. The second ring is the coworker's family and contacts themselves, and they should be self-monitoring. And if they have any signs of illness, they should get tested.
And is there a time frame that if someone's been getting exposed, and I'm asking a question that I can't even quite get out there correctly, can someone be exposed and then not have symptoms for a very long period of time, or do you normally know within, you know, a few days?
So that's called the incubation period, the time between the time you get exposed and the time you have symptoms. Early on, there were some people who will look to have longer incubation periods, but that's probably because they had multiple contacts. I think right now we're seeing that the incubation period is not less than 2 days and probably not more than 14 days, but most of these cases are going to have an incubation period of 4, 5, or 6 days, which is considerably longer than the flu, which is 2 or 3 days. So 4, 5, or 6 days, and we give it 2 weeks to be absolutely sure. And so, you know, for example, if I got exposed, and I'm seeing patients, so I could get exposed, I would most likely get symptoms 4, 5, or 6 days after the exposure. Now, it's been 6 days since I've done the flu clinic, so presumably swabbing all those noses didn't get me sick.
Brian, talk more about some of the work you're going to be involved in the rest of this week dealing with this as an epidemiologist.
Well, we are training the group of the strike team. So we'll be giving them information on how to do the interviews, how to keep confidentiality, how to go through the interview protocol, make sure all the questions are asked. And then we will have a schedule. We'll be knowing who we start with. We'll be getting the cases out of the epidemiological database, the same database that's linked to the laboratory tests that tell us what cases that we have. And then we'll be managing the people or supervising the people and managing all of those cases and putting all of that data into the state database.
Wow. I would imagine as you are trained and you talked extensively about your background, there's probably many things you've learned over your career that better prepare you for a situation like this.
Yeah, it just, like I say, it just seems to have been what my whole career has sort of culminated in, through public health, through communicable disease, through control, and through public health emergency preparedness and response. And we have a lot of assets. We have the federal stockpile, the strategic national stockpile. We have the servor, the volunteers in the state, and we have other assets as well. We are kind of working closely now with the county as well. So the county and the state emergency management and our public health partners at the state and other counties, we're working well together.
And Dr. Bob, talk about just what it's taking to do all of this. Brian mentioned the volunteers, but you've got other people that have been kind of added behind the scenes in other roles to help you keep track of all of this.
Well, we feel we've been blessed with so much support from others. So, you know, like at the Oscars where people forget who they're supposed to thank, I will forget someone, but ADAPT has done a great job in providing us space and all kinds of things that we need for our physical upkeep. the county has provided us with all kinds of things. So to give you an example, we needed to get some Tyvek suits for the people who do these things. And the commissioner himself was out there this morning tracking down Tyvek suits. So we had tremendous support that way. Aviva has been a great support. They've given us some staff members that help us staff the hotline. And then Kim Gandy, especially, who was coordinated the hotline and the clinics. So we have gotten just blessed with tremendous amounts of support from the community.
And obviously, people in Douglas County are well known for getting involved in helping out. But I suppose one of the things you'd say at a point like this is, if you're on board, this is going to be a long ride.
This is going to be a long ride. Anybody who thinks it's going to be over quickly hasn't really looked at the data. Looking at the data, our hope is that we can make this a long ride. Because the concern, our biggest concern, is that we get 1,000 cases in a month. And if we had 1,000 cases in a month, it would overwhelm everything. Our goal is to slow that down so that we can bring that to 100 or so cases a month. At 100 or so cases a month, the hospital could handle that, and then wait until we either find an effective therapy or a vaccine to get this out of society. But until we get a vaccine, or until we get some kind of effective preventive therapy, this is going to be with us for a while. So although China beat it back, you know, they get up to 80,000 cases, they're still having cases every day. In Korea, although they really beat it back, they're still having cases every day. So nobody's done with it. But at best, what you can hope is you could beat it back to a manageable situation.
And just about ready to wrap up again, the next Facebook Live, Dr. Bob, coming up in just over an hour at 6 o'clock.
That's right. I'll see you then.
All right, Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, County Public Health Officer, and Brian Mahoney, the Public Health Modernization Program Coordinator, joining us from over in the ADAPT building at DPHN. Gentlemen, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having
us. 4:59 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by CHI Mercy Health Mercy Medical Center. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.